Hello and welcome to the Q3 2020 Hotchkiss and Wiley High Yield Market Update. My name is John Hossie and I am joined today by Mark Hudoff, Portfolio Manager on the High Yield Strategy. Today, we will be providing an update on performance for the third quarter of 2020, as well as providing a review of the high yield market more generally. Before we begin, a few disclosures. This podcast is for general information only and should not be relied on for investment advice or recommendation of any particular security, strategy, or investment product. The portfolio manager's views and opinions expressed in this podcast are as of September 30th, 2020. Such views are subject to change and may differ from others in the firm or the firm as a whole. The portfolio manager's comments include some estimated and/or forecasted views, which are believed to be based on reasonable assumptions within the bounds of current and historical information. However, there is no guarantee that any estimates, forecasts, or views will be realized. In the event of new information or changed circumstances, Hotchkiss and Wiley reserves the right to change its investment perspective and outlook. So, Mark, as usual, why don't we begin with a look back at what transpired in Q3 and how that impacted performance of the Hotchkiss and Wiley high yield strategy?
Okay, John, thanks. Well, third quarter was a strong quarter for high yield. I mean, both nominally and relative to history. The broad BBB market was up about 4.33%. What were the factors that led to the strong market? I mean, I think rebound of the COVID shock was continuing, kind of gaining some momentum. I think it was the footing for the recovery was kind of the unprecedented amount of stimulus and support by the Fed, particularly in the higher quality sector, although I'll talk about the nuances there later. And really, it was just kind of bouncing off the bottom in the second quarter and kind of marching forward into the third quarter allowed spreads to tighten. We also saw, you know, liquidity improve pretty dramatically in the market. That translated into better returns for small caps and mid caps versus the large caps. In thinking about attribution, I mean, small caps came in at about 75 basis points of outperformance versus the BBB market. Large caps also did better than the broad market, up 27 basis points, but it was a clear reinvigoration of the liquidity into the market, primarily from the kind of technical that drove the SMID cup much better or tighter. You know, quality, I guess I would argue that it was that quality was kind of upside down in terms of performance, and that by that I mean it was low quality actually did well in the quarter. Triple B's actually really lagged the BBB market. Not that it's an index, but it is always interesting to follow that. There was 219 basis points of underperformance of triple B's versus the BBB market. Double B's dragged the market. They were down about 16 basis points. The single B's up slightly, up 27 basis points, but the real winner in the third quarter was triple C's. And that was bouncing off of really bad liquidity and really bad spread performance in the second quarter. So a bit of a strongly disproportionate rebound in the bottom part of the quality spectrum. So kind of a rebound from the bottom of the shock, led by lower quality and smaller capitalization names.
Now, Mark, do you think the quality aspect where the lower quality stuff outperformed, is that just simply a function of coming off the bottom?
Well, in a microcosm, it is. It's coming off the bottom. It's also more certitude in the expansion, the fact that we were jumping off the bottom or bouncing off the bottom, both on one side, getting the technical support from the Fed and from the federal government for support. But on the other side, that the economy responding to that, also the dissipation in the number of COVID cases, that kind of rolling over, also the mortality. We learned a lot about the mortality of the COVID pandemic. We come to find out as you sift through the data that comorbidity or people with multiple conditions and age are really the key critical factors. Younger people and healthy people are much less susceptible to it. So it's not broadly a disease or a virus that affects everyone the same. It affects a relatively smaller subset of society. that and kind of heterogeneous opening the economy, I think, kind of aided in the rebound. And the sectors that overshot the most was low quality and small capitalization. So it was consistent with coming off the bottom of the fundamentals returning back and low quality, you know, risk premium responding.
So, Mark, what part of the credit rating cohort looks most attractive to you and why right now?
Well, for us, you know, I think that we still remain very, very much oriented towards an opportunity set that's really in a barbell. We like the fallen angels, which tend to be in the higher quality space, double Bs. Certainly there's some single Bs, but it's mainly the migration from triple B land down into double B land. So that remains a theme that we continue to follow. I'll talk about that a little bit more in the there could be two trajectories next year in that space. On the other hand, our mainline expectation is that the rebound will continue in the fundamentals. And as a result, we like single Bs and we like the smaller capitalization names. We think they're both still cheap. We think they offer a lot of upside. And frankly, that translates into the orientation of the portfolio where we're overweight small caps, you know, long and strong in that space. We're long fallen angels. And we're also long the single B space. That's a structural orientation for us, given the nature of our strategy. But it's unambiguous that we think therein lies, in that credit space, lies the opportunity going forward.
Are there particular industries you're more interested in right now?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, again, we think that fallen angels look interesting still. I think that there's two scenarios that could develop next year. You got to kind of put it in context where fallen angels are. They're on the cusp of a rating migration, and their fundamentals will dictate that. If next year we see a sluggish recovery, a return of COVID concerns, re-acceleration of the virus without a vaccine, economic conditions could get worse. That will produce more rating migration and more opportunities. So that's one thread. The other thread, though, is if the COVID threat really starts to dissipate, like a lot of the models predict, and the economy continues to grow, and more openings and things like that, then kind of the day of reckoning in terms of rating migration might be modulated, and we might not see as big a migration down as maybe we originally thought, just given the size of the overhang. So that's two threads that remains a very interesting space, but next year will kind of dictate the opportunity set. I think that, you know, cyclicals, basic materials, and industrials look interesting. They got beat up at the kind of trough, and we still think that's interesting. Leisure opportunities, there's some interesting opportunities in gaming and things like that. Those sectors were particularly hard hit with shutdown, and there may be some opportunities there. Energy looks like it's bottomed. I'm still a little cautious on energy, given there is some election implications there. And services still look like, oil field services still look like they're kind of, you know, consolidating. So I don't think the bottom's been reached there, but in E&P and midstream and things like that, it does look like it's bottomed. And we're still somewhat cautious there. Retail is another open question. There's both demographic and shock things going on at once. I mean, from a shock point of view, it's quite clear, stores closed, no sales, et cetera. That's going to change if our baseline expectation comes true. The bigger problem is they have a demographic and a consumption problem. Cannibalization by the web has become, you know, accelerated through the COVID period of time. All these retailers, both brand and, you know, stores, are toggling as fast as they possibly can to kind of this multi-channel model. And it's not without issues. If you're a brand, moving from the storefront to internet distribution has got all sorts of issues tied to it. And when you're trying to do that writ large, there's some issues. So, and a lot of issues. So I think that that's an area that remains kind of an open question. I think it's still too early for airlines and cruise companies, except for in the very, very senior part of the capital structure. We have positions and secured exposure there, but going down in capital structure, it's still probably too early for that. That's a particularly vulnerable space to kind of an extension of the COVID risk.
So overall, where do you see the most opportunity, I guess, for some further spread tightening?
Well, I think that the top of the list, you know, okay, so you got to look at it kind of top down and bottom up. From a top down point of view, the spread that looks the most interesting from looking at it in a historical context is that large cap to small cap spread. It's still very wide. It's wide from where we started the year. It's wide to history. Right now, SMIDs are kind of in the 270 to 300 basis points wide of the large cap market. Historically, that's been a very interesting kind of entry point. We think that there's 100 basis points of tightening potential there in maybe a 12 to 18 month horizon. So that's one that we have a lot of conviction with, especially with our expectation that we're going to muddle through at the worst and we're going to expand nicely at the best in 21 and into 22. I guess the second area I would say is broadly high yield looks attractive. It's still wide from the beginning of the year. It's wide in a lot of aspects. The term structure of interest rates is pretty steep right now. So being in the belly of the high yield curve is actually pretty attractive right now. As I mentioned earlier, I think single Bs are attractive. I think if you combine spread tightening in small cap to large cap plus tightening in single B, you definitely would match the spread tightening, could match the spread tightening that I mentioned already in that small cap, large cap premium. So that's the second area. I think Fallen Angels is really much more of a bottom-up story. It's hard to say that broadly Fallen Angels should tighten to this level. It's really on a name-by-name basis. There, we think broadly that there's definitely opportunities. Those guys are going to, in some cases, if we see an expansion in the economy, kind of orderly, we could see substantial outperformance in individual names in that space that were beaten up in the COVID crisis and aspirationally have kind of changed their stripes and realize that maybe credit migration isn't what it's all kicked in or all knocked out to be. And they want to kind of reestablish a better balance sheet. That translates into better risk premia and outperformance. So in order, I would say those three things from the two top-down ideas and then the bottom-up idea.
So do you think, Mark, that a stimulus package is necessary for continued improvement in the economy?
You know, without getting into too much minutia, I think until there's a virus solution, a vaccine that can be deployed, there's going to be a lot of competing narratives on how scary the virus is. There's going to be disproportionate policy treatment. It's going to be, you know, kind of continuation of the policy kind of malaise that we have in the United States. That doesn't make things easy for expansion. And there's a lot of people in this economy, workers in the economy, that are really in dire circumstances. Shutdowns in California and New York and you know, various big states are really putting a lot of pressure on people that have small businesses. I mean, the default rate or the bankruptcy rate in small businesses is just astronomical. And the only way you're going to solve part of that problem is to initiate some stimulus, efficiently initiate some stimulus into that space. The problem you have is that stimulus is no longer, in my opinion, deemed let's all roll up our sleeves and target the most worthy of the stimulus. It's rather much more of a political calculus. And in that case, I have no way to handicap it. I can see both parties trying to extract a pound of flesh on one side, an inordinately large stimulus program that has all sorts of different bells and whistles on it, and versus one that is purportedly more targeted. But at the end of the day, I remain skeptical on the efficiency of the stimulus. At the end of the day, though, I do believe that it would help, and whether it's necessary is unclear to me. It definitely would help the recovery, though.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. It's really interesting to see how this is all unfolding before our eyes and ears here. So, you know, with that, I'll launch my last question to you, which is, this is election season. We've talked a little bit about fiscal stimulus and what the political environment is doing to that cause, whether it's going to happen or not. Do you have a view on risk or opportunity to the market based on certain outcomes from this election?
Well, it's a great question. I kind of break it down into two things. First, overarching idea is that the market hates uncertainty. You saw it in the Gore Bush election when we had hanging chads and, you know, Supreme Court opining on Florida. This is the I'm not, you know, a political watcher, but I have been around a while. And this is the most politically charged election I've ever seen. And polarization is probably amped up even further. And there's, you know, with all the different changes to the election mechanisms, whether it's mail-in voting, early voting, late voting, it's going to be, in my opinion, it has the potential of being a real bag of cats. And no one's talking about it, which really makes me nervous, because if we get into election day and they can't call a winner, and there's governors that have outright said that it's going to be months before they get an election count. If that's a important state, we could be sitting around waiting for months. That affects the transition team. You can just imagine the kind of diatribes they're going to be flying around in that regard. I think we could enter into a really sloppy month or so. Now, at the end of the day, I do believe there'll be a peaceful transition of power to whoever the winner is. Court systems will accommodate, you know, a speedy resolution of it. I got to believe. I don't think we'll devolve into a real rabbit hole where it goes beyond the statutory time for inauguration of the next president. But I think it's going to be a bag of cats. I think that that's going to be uncertainty, and the market's not going to like it. In terms of outcome, I have no idea. I can make arguments on both sides that if the Democrats win, that's going to be good because it's going to dissipate a lot of the angry noise or the noise that's been flowing through the system for over 3 years. I can also make the argument that the new policy planks are very different. And from a market point of view, more regulation, top-down decisions about capital deployment, I don't think those are efficient solutions. And so I think that modulates the growth of the economy. But that said, you know, we've had a lot of noise in the system for 3.5 years or 3.75 years, and having a respite from that would be a nice thing. So I'm not sure. I think under both scenarios, though, it really is about how fast the economy grows. Does it grow well above kind of the 2% in a steady state, or does it grow kind of at or maybe slightly below that? Both those scenarios are good for credit.
Well, Mark, it certainly will be noisy over the next couple of weeks as we head into the election. Hopefully it quiets down shortly thereafter and we can experience some better, you know, economic data to come. It's getting a little bit better in certain spots, a lot of room for improvement in others. But as always, I appreciate your time. And I thank our audience for their interest in Hotchkiss & Wiley. For further information, please visit www.hwcm.com or call us at 888-596-4926. Thank you.